10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
So you guys are building everything in-house. Have you had any, like, major catastrophes?
We had a lot of catastrophes in the beginning. I think it was almost, like, entirely catastrophe for a while. It was just, like, hundreds of different designs and a lot of things weren't working. And we had to change how we were thinking about it, like, all the time.
Who are the Misfits? Carrie Byron. Tori Belleci. Together more than 20 years having fun together.
Welcome, Misfits.
You seem fired up, Tori. Have you had a lot of extra coffee this morning?
No, but I'm excited about the theme of this episode. The reason why I'm excited is we're going to be talking about Archimedes, which we tested a lot of his inventions on Mythbusters. If you guys don't know who Archimedes is, he was a Greek philosopher, Greek engineer, inventor. And one of his inventions was the Archimedes death ray. And the whole idea was if you had an army of soldiers with polished brass or copper, you could reflect the sun, focus the sun into a spot, and they would be able to set ships on fire that were trying to invade their country. And we tried that the first time. And it was such a fun experiment. And then we did it. We retested it.
I think it was actually bronze shields. Bronze shields. So it's like not even as shiny as copper. It was just like kind of dimmer metal.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we couldn't afford bronze. So we went with copper.
So that was a really interesting episode. And I believe that this is my theory, is that it may have inspired today's guest, which I was sitting around with Tracy Fanara at the STEM Festival. She always helps me out over in Washington, D.C. And we were talking about people who used to be on the search. And one of them was this, at the time, kid, Ben Nowak. And he's got this really wild invention. And we were talking about it in a previous episode, where he's sending mirrors on satellites up into space so he can basically make a giant Archimedes death ray in the sky and focus the sun down onto Earth.
Whoa, not necessarily a death ray. You're not going to be setting things on fire, but it is an interesting concept that during the middle of the night, anywhere in the world, if you want to order some sun, there are satellites that you can aim the mirrors to your location. So let's say, you know, there's an emergency, you need light, you can just order some sun. I mean, it's such a crazy concept.
The Archimedes death ray didn't really work. It was really just sort of a reflection. So it seems like the way he conceived it seems very much like that weird Mythbusters experiment. So I'm wondering if there may have been a spark, like maybe there was just like a little catalyst moment where, you know, he's very Mythbuster adjacent. If he saw that episode and was like, I work at SpaceX. Maybe I can send all the mirrors up into space and do the same sort of thing. I don't know. I'm very curious to ask him about it because it's such a wild, weird, giant project.
It feels so science fiction-y. But because we were going to be talking to him today, I went back and watched those two episodes. So the Archimedes death ray, our first attempt, we took a giant, this is the platform that I was building when Adam came in and I was going too slow and he's yelling at me and I yelled back. And then in the edit, they just show me yelling at him. And I'm like, wait, I'm not just yelling at people for no reason. Like there was a reason. Why'd you cut that out?
Because they made you look like a dick. It was awesome.
Totally. I was like, dude, this is not cool. And I'm like, Adam, you and I have worked together for years. You know, I'm not slacking. Like, it's not like you left and I'm just sitting around trying to, you know, get away with not working. It was such a complex platform that we were trying to get, you know, we built these like boxes that we were bolting together and it had to be perfectly flat. Basically, what we were doing is we were gluing all these mirrors to this giant platform at an angle so we could create a concave lens to focus all the sunlight to one spot and basically create this laser beam.
And I remember the mirrors had to be adjustable so that we could get it. It was so complicated.
And we were able to adjust them from the back with little screws. And so we went out there and I remember you and I built like a section of boat to test this. And we went out to the dock, set it up, and we were like trying to focus in. And it wasn't getting hot enough. And so then I think Adam came up with the idea, what if we got a bunch of mirrors? Because we started with copper, then we went to Mylar, and then we're like, why don't we just get mirrors? It's going to be reflecting the sun at 100%. So we got all these volunteers to come in to hold up all these big mirrors. And Jamie was on the boat, and he was like, we had found this boat, and we kind of like stripped it down to make it look like an old Greek boat. Jamie was on it, and then Adam was directing everybody to try to hit laser beams into Jamie's boat. But everybody was having trouble trying to focus it.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just we were trying to make it all period correct. So we created a hull out of the right wood, and we were painting the whole thing with the right tar. And at the time, our safety guy was really into like nautical sea shanties. And it was really weird back then because it was just, you know, it was as reality as possible. And this guy was just singing and really wanted to have the attention. And I remember just like the whole time he's just singing pirate songs while we're trying to get this thing done. It's like, oh God. That's
so bizarre.
But it was so bizarre.
But I remember it was like hundreds. There were so many volunteers and they're all holding up mirrors. But because they were all just holding them up by hand, each volunteer was having trouble keeping it focused on a single spot on the boat. So it never really got hot enough to catch fire. But then now, flash forward, MIT shot a video where they took a piece of wood and they created this system where they built all these giant shelves and then put the mirrors on the shelves and you could adjust them. So you didn't have the human holding it, which made it a problem. You could just have it resting. Once you focused all the mirrors to one spot, that spot would stay hot. You know, you weren't dealing with people trying to continue to keep it focused.
Yeah, but we were trying to replicate the actual myth, which was a bunch of dudes with bronze shields. So it makes more sense the way that we did it to actually.
However, in my head, I'm remembering it was busted, right?
It was plausible just because we got a heat temperature, right?
Well, what happened is we were shooting it like 40 feet away. And all of a sudden the boat started smoking and it created this black spot. And then what they did is after that failed, we brought the boat in maybe about like 15, 20 feet and the boat caught on fire from the spot of sunlight. It was insane because the boat was across the channel and even from across the channel, 40 feet away, it turned black and started smoking. And it was like very promising. But, you know, like in a battle situation, no one's going to be sitting still letting you set their boat on fire.
Hold still. Hold still, you guys. We want to heat up your boat.
Yeah. But just to prove the MIT's point, we were like, let's just see if we brought the boat in a little closer to see if we can increase the intensity of that sunspot. And sure enough, it caught on fire. And it was like one of those moments. It was like, oh my gosh, like we just set this boat on fire using nothing but focused reflected sun. It was one of those moments on Mythbusters where all of us couldn't believe our eyes. And the MIT guys were like so stoked that it worked. And I love that moment where it was like the boat catches on fire. It was like, oh my gosh, we did it.
I mean, that's why I really believe that exciting moment might have brought our guest to his invention. I feel like we should get some equity. What do you think? Can we ask him for some equity? I hear they got $20 million in seed funding for their invention. Ooh. It hasn't been tested yet, but it's called Reflect Orbital. So I'm going to ask if we can get a percentage because, you know, we were involved in that.
I like where your head's at. Until now, you wouldn't be able to do this efficiently because of SpaceX. And, you know, you have all these independent rocket developers who are launching rockets and then landing them. They're able to get satellites up there way cheaper, way more effectively. And only now is, you know, would this invention be plausible?
I mean, it's going to be fascinating. I have so many questions for him. I mean, everything from, I want to know what the implications are for even just the dark sky advocates. Like, are they, is this going to be something that's used for good or evil? How do you control that? There's so much to that. This is such a rich conversation. I'm really excited to talk to him.
Like light pollution, how is it going to affect the environment? I mean, what if you're like pissed off at somebody and you're just like, I'm going to put a light on their house every night. I'm just going to put, there's going to be daylight every day.
It's not daylight. It only has the effect of like what a full moon would have. So it's light, but it's not like daylight so far. All right. So I see he's actually in the waiting room. Let's just bring him in.
Let's let him in. Carrie, have you ever wanted to start a small business?
I feel like I have crazy business ideas all the time, but it's a really daunting thing to think about starting it. Like all of the things involved from trying to like reach customers to like building a website. It's really, really intimidating. I mean, when we started this podcast, there just the checklist alone in trying to figure out how we're going to start the small business, just it was grueling.
Well, only if there was a platform where you didn't have to figure out all those things, but it was a one-stop shop platform.
Well, I'm glad we've got our new partner, Shopify, so other people don't have to go through what we went through.
If you guys are starting a small business or you want to start a small business, now you have this platform that takes all the guesswork away.
Shopify helps you take your idea to an actual business. Don't you wish that you already had a financial planner and an accountant and all the people involved in starting a small business, but you could just do it with one simple app? That's where Shopify comes in. Everything from checkout to getting paid is already built in, leaving you more time to just focus on building that business.
Shopify checkout helps more customers complete their purchases.
And everything you need to start selling from day one. That gives you more time to focus on your growing business.
And Shopify is trusted by millions of businesses worldwide.
With Shopify, nothing stands between your business idea and a real business. So go make it one.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/mythfits.
Start that free trial with shopify.com/mythfits.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey, Ben, welcome. Welcome to the Mythfits.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You know, it's wild. I was talking with Tracy Fanara about Reflect Orbital before I knew that you were on The Search with her. I'm going to be honest. I didn't watch The Search at the time. I had to go back and watch this stuff now. I heard a rumor that you weren't even old enough to be on Mythbusters The Search. Is that true?
That is true. Yeah. I was quite young.
I did put it in a note.
But I like, it said like it automatically rejected you if you were too young. So I was like, hey, I'm actually too young, but I like really want to apply.
So you were 17 years old and you had to be 18 years old.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I want to be a Mythbuster. I'm just going for it anyway.
I want to do it. I'm going to try. Yeah. Yeah. It was my first internship at SpaceX when that happened. I think it was 2016, like almost over 10 years ago.
That's ballsy.
Yeah.
And they didn't do any background checks on you, I take it.
No background checks. Yeah.
Come on, Tori. Discovery Channel never did background checks.
but I mean, like when you went to fill out the paperwork, how did you, like, they're like, date of birth? You're like,
I forget exactly what I did. Yeah. It wasn't like completely insane, but yeah, there was like a question. It was like, are you over 18? And I was like, yeah.
What'd you think of that whole experience?
It was crazy. I mean, I'd been a fan of Mythbusters forever. I mean, I watched it the whole time I was growing up. I think I've watched every single episode. I mean, you can quiz me, like maybe I'm missing a couple things. It's been a while, but I like watched them all maybe twice, like probably 80% of them two or three times.
That's, I mean, it's more like, than we've watched them. So you're already going to be ahead of us. Like Tori will jog my memory sometimes. I'm like, I don't remember that even happening. I got to go back and watch them.
Oh, you guys did so much stuff. It was insane. Honestly, it was a huge inspiration for me. I had a YouTube channel. I just like went building like crazy. And I was like, I mean, the Mythbusters could do it. Like, let me just try. That like was a thought that occurred to me many times. It was super fun. And yeah, I just like, somebody sent me an email. One of my friends was like, hey, there's this Mythbusters, the search thing. You should do it. And I was like, all right, cool. Let me see if I can get it. And then they like kept inviting me back for interviews. And eventually they were like, yeah, we want you to be on. And I was like, okay, cool. Well, I'm gonna have to fit it in between my SpaceX internship and going back to school. But it actually worked out perfect.
I can't believe you left a SpaceX internship to go do Mythbusters.
Dude, it's like, let me see. Go do some amazing technological stuff in space travel, space engineering, or go be on a
reality show.
Yeah. Horrible TV
Honestly,
show.
I was worried about it. So I asked my manager, I was like, hey, do you think I should do this? Like, it's TV. And he was like, yeah, dude, go do it. Like, you only get one chance to do something like that. You should totally do it. So I was worried about it, though. I was like, are they like ever going to invite me back? Like, but luckily it worked out. Yeah, it was funny. And then like, actually, I was not going to go back to school after the search as well. Like, I got kicked off after the first two episodes, which is kind of a good thing, because I would have had to drop out of school that semester if I stayed on any longer. It was like,
oh man,
that was my sophomore year of college.
I think the universe provided, because it only went one season. So thank goodness you got kicked off and, you know, went on to create something insane. I have a theory, and tell me if I'm correct. Did the Archimedes Death Ray episode have any inspiration for you to create Reflect Orbital? It's just a theory.
Not directly.
Darn it. We were hoping we could get some equity.
Carrie wanted some equity in your company.
It was probably like the fourth or fifth thought, though, is like, oh, yeah, it's kind of like that Mythbusters episode, like a bunch of mirrors. I mean, that is basically what it is. It's like just move the death ray to space and like do it with a bunch of satellites and like overlap all the satellites together. And you get more power. I think it was part of the like, oh, this actually might work. It's just a lot of mirrors. You know, it's like it's been around for a long time.
Can you explain it? Can you give us your elevator pitch of what Reflect Orbital is? Because we talked about it a little bit on our like new inventions episode, because it was so wild and weird. And I didn't think it was real at first. So can you explain exactly what it is?
Yeah, we are working on controlling the most powerful resource in the whole solar system. That is the sun. It powers everything. It grows all the plants. Most of our energy is from the sun anyway, like fossil fuels is trees that died millions of years ago and then turned into fossil fuels and now we burn it. So basically everything comes from the sun in one way or another. And no animal has ever controlled the sun at night. We just all accept that the sun is gone for 12 hours and we make do. And we're trying to change that for the first time, and we're trying to do it right. The way we figured out how to do it is you use little thin mirrors like this that are made of super thin plastic, and you put that on a satellite, and then you can rotate the satellite to point to different areas on the Earth. You can make these extremely light. The rockets work very well. So a lot of this technology already exists. And with that, you're able to precisely redirect sunlight to certain areas on Earth. The original idea was to power on solar farms, so you can create clean electricity all night. Solar is really great during the day, but when the sun goes down, it doesn't work. So then you need, you know, either batteries, or really what ends up happening is people burn a lot of natural gas. And we just keep burning more and more natural gas despite how many solar farms we have. But we can hope to change that by adding sunlight to those solar farms, turn them on at night, and keep everything going. You can do a lot of other stuff with sunlight, though. We discovered that, I mean, we can light up a 6,000-acre area just by moving a satellite a tiny little bit. So that can be a huge game changer in emergency situations. We had over a dozen people reach out after the terrible earthquakes in Venezuela saying like, hey, is there anything you guys can do to light up this area so we can help find people in the rubble? It's really hard to find people at night. You just can't see as well. And a lot of the emergency response operations ground to a halt at night, and they couldn't even fly in like diesel generators because the airport was down as well. So we could have actually been there in a couple minutes and lit up the whole area, and like stuff like that is just like super inspiring. And it's like, you know, it kind of thought of this crazy idea. I was like, oh, maybe we could like control the sun and potentially add a new energy source that might be, you know, better and actually easier than fusion, but cleaner than fossil fuels and more abundant than like wave energy or something like that. But then along the way, we kind of learned that you can use sunlight for so many other things. It's how we see during the day as well. And it's kind of comparable to like when light bulbs were invented, like it just became easier to light up large areas. I think this is kind of the next step.
Wait, so the problem that you wanted to solve is harnessing the sun for solar energy. It's sort of like an eco motivation, but as well for emergencies. That's where you came in with your, what problem do I need to solve?
Yeah, it was really for energy. I mean, even before like Mythbusters, the Search, or SpaceX or anything, I built a lot of things in high school. One of the things I built was a fusion reactor, like one of those little Farnsworth fusers.
Wait, high school you built yourself a fusion reactor?
What?
Yeah. I mean, it didn't work, right? Like none of them work, but no, I built a ton of stuff. I built like superconductors and x-ray machines and like all kinds of things. I had a YouTube channel called Ben N Builds. I guess that's partially how I got on the Search and into SpaceX. I built like all kinds of drones and stuff too. But yeah, when I built the fusion reactor, I built it because I was like, yeah, this is what is going to save us from fossil fuels, right? Like this is going to be the new energy source that fixes everything. And I built the thing and I was like, oh, this is kind of terrible. Like the sun is way better at fusion than this. And this is kind of like all the researchers are doing too. They're making a lot of progress on like plasma physics and stuff like that. But I don't know if it's actually practical yet. They're still trying to figure out a lot of physics problems. It's not even at engineering problems yet. And I was like, oh man, I don't know if this is it. And since then I've always tried to like figure out the next energy source. And I actually started trying to make antimatter in high school. I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to make a linear accelerator and I'm going to make 4 and 18.
Ben, the kid genius is giving me.
What kind of a kid were you?
I don't know. I mean, I watched a lot of Mythbusters. Like, I think that might be part of what did it.
I'm very glad that you are hoping to use your powers for good instead of evil, because you're giving me some young Lex Luthor vibes with the whole I want to control the sun.
So that was a real thought. Yeah. Like before I built cool stuff like that, I actually was like, oh, I got to make like things that blow up. And then I did like a couple little things that were like a little too big. And I was like, no, this is like, this is not the right path. Like I need to use the building stuff for good. But I think that was also Mythbusters inspired. Like you'd be surprised like how much inspiration came from Mythbusters.
That's awesome. Yeah. Were you at SpaceX when you came up with this idea?
No. So I did two.
Oh, so they don't have ownership over it. That's good, right?
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah. I worked at like, so at SpaceX was like my freshman and sophomore year of college, like 10 years ago. I learned that the rockets are a very small piece of the total value stack of space. Like they get the stuff into space, but then the thing that makes all the money in space is whatever the satellite is. And that usually pays for the rocket. And I was kind of like, all right, there's only like five real ways to make money in space right now. And like the biggest one is telecommunications, which has kind of been around since the 60s. Like, and all that's going to happen with or without me. Like, I feel like I'm crazy enough that I need to go and figure out something new to do. So I worked at a bunch of startups for a while and just like tried to get really good at building newer things. And I had the idea for Reflect while I was working at a company called Zipline that delivers blood and medical products with drones in places like Rwanda and Ghana. And they're coming to the US now too. They have all those operations in Texas, which is super cool. You know, I've been building drones my whole life, so I was like, oh, this is just like too good to pass up. I have to go and do this. And yeah, I was just working there and had this idea at like, I think it was like 11 p.m. And then I stay up till like 4 a.m. just like doing the first economic models. And yeah.
Dude, you're like Tony Stark.
I don't know. That was always the dream, right? I mean, yeah.
I don't know about you, Tori, but I am the worst at making doctor's appointments. I feel like I just never know where to start. I don't know who to look for. And for me, it just makes it one of those things that I just put at the end of my to-do list.
I feel like since the pandemic, a lot of people are finding that they can live wherever they want to work remotely. But when you're moving to a new place, it's hard to find a new doctor.
Or even just your doctor moving away, they leave and then all of a sudden you have to start over from scratch to try to find somebody who's actually that you're going to trust.
And then the most annoying part is you find a good doctor, but then you go to your insurance and they're like, no, they're not on our policy. You can't use that doctor.
Yes. And that's why we're partnering with ZocDoc, because it makes comparing in-network doctors, reading reviews and booking appointments online just so much easier without the usual hassle.
And with ZocDoc, you can browse real patient reviews and detailed doctor profiles, see available appointments, and book instantly.
Your health matters, and taking care of yourself shouldn't be complicated. Find and book the right doctor with ZocDoc. Head to ZocDoc.com/MythFits and get started. Check that appointment off your to-do list. That's ZocDoc.com/MythFits.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
So the engineering helped you build the prototype for this, but I'm wondering, do you think that the, being able to tell the story, like your old days of YouTube storytelling, helped you actually get the idea across the line? Because I think, you know, there's a lot of engineers out there that have great ideas, but if you can't tell that story, how do you get to the place where people want to invest in it and build a team?
Yeah, you have to be able to communicate your idea. I really leaned on video for this. We made a video of our hot air balloon test, and that's what attracted Sequoia Capital. And Sequoia was like our dream partner. That's like, I got the job at SpaceX. You know, like, oh, I got into MIT. I never got into MIT, but I was like, oh, that would be the thing, right? Get Sequoia. Like, if you could do that, it'd be unbelievable. And I made this video. It was like super crazy music. It was very much like 2002, like, build montage. And I was like, yeah, it's just the vibe. Like, I don't know. That's how I used to make videos. It's going to be super fun. And yeah, Sean McGuire, who's put like $1 billion into SpaceX, was like, it got his attention. And then he took a call with us and we had all the economics figured out. We had this whole business plan. He was just like, oh man, I've looked at like 50 space solar companies. Like, this is the first one that actually makes sense. And you guys seem like the right people to do it. And it was like,
wow,
boom, we got Sequoia Capital because we were able to communicate it well, because we had the whole plan, because we put in like tons of work, like years of work, to get to that point where we could be palatable to like a tier one financial VC like that.
So you guys are building everything in-house. Have you had any like major catastrophes?
We had a lot of catastrophes in the beginning. I think it was almost like entirely catastrophe for a while. It was just like hundreds of different designs and a lot of things weren't working. And we had to change how we were thinking about it like all the time. Recently, like once we started actually like building the satellite, like once we designed the thing and like went and built it, that was pretty smooth because we planned it out really well. But in the early days, when you're trying to figure out what to do, you need to be able to change so many different things so quickly. Like, yeah, you can just spend a lot of time on completely the wrong thing. So I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to make the spotlight smaller. And I worked on these like collimator tiles where it's a bunch of like Cassegrain telescopes in parallel in this like injection moldable thing that, you know, is kind of similar to like safety glasses being made. And I spent like months on this. And like then one day I like did the economics a little bit differently than I had before. And I was like, this just doesn't make any sense at all. Like, just throw that away and use a flat reflector and like just find customers that want a big spot of light. Like, there's so many more small solar farms, but like just a couple of the really big ones make up for all of that. And you might as well just like serve a big spot and just like not serve the small ones. And it was just like a different way to think about it that like I just wasted months on. And there's many examples of that. I think like, I mean, throughout the years, I've had so many terrible ideas, like, and you just have to keep going. Like, the one thing I really focused on was killing the terrible ideas as quickly as possible. You know, because you'll talk to somebody and be like, oh, I have this really cool idea. And you ever think in your head, like, oh, that's kind of a stupid idea. You should really tell them. you should really tell them that's a stupid idea. And if it's you and you're like, oh, I wonder if this is a stupid idea, like, figure out if it's a stupid idea so quickly. Because then as soon as you kill the idea, you can move on to the next thing. And the faster...
Fail fast and pivot. We've heard this before.
Yes. It's so important. Like, if like having 1,000 ideas in your lifetime versus 100,000 is a very different kind of lifetime. You're going to get to the way cooler ones when you can go through them faster. And it's just like that skill is so important. And yeah, I would say those are the biggest disasters, is like wasting a bunch of time or a bunch of money on something. Like, I mean, hot air balloon testing was crazy. Like, we it took us 7 tries to get that hot air balloon test to work. And we had to like rebuild the entire operating system every time, like the entire aiming system, like each time. And it was this like, yeah, that was crazy. Like, anytime you do something, there's always like a million failures, but as long as you just like keep at it and keep like changing the right stuff, you can get the thing done.
And it sounds like the simple solution is what worked for you.
Yeah, just build the flat mirror. Like, don't try to curve it. I spent a lot of time trying to like curve the mirror so it was a parabola. The only way that ever makes sense is if you're making something that's like a kilometer in diameter anyway. Because when you curve it, you can like get rid of the size of the satellite. So like, say you're reflecting, you know, a 5 kilometer diameter circle from a 10 meter diameter satellite. It's actually like 5 kilometers plus 10 meters because you're reflecting an image of the sun off each edge. If it's like a kilometer, then now you're like at the same altitude. Now the spot's going to be 6 kilometers in diameter because you're reflecting it from each edge of a kilometer satellite. But if you curved it, then it would go back to 5. But like curving a kilometer thing is like way crazier than just like launching a ton of little like 10 or 100 meter things.
I'm nodding my head like I understand what the hell you're talking about right now.
No, I mean, it's the same thing when we were building the death ray. Remember how complicated it was until we actually just like held up a bunch of mirrors? I mean, yeah, just a flat mirror.
Now, how bright can you make a spot with these reflective satellites?
Yeah, bring us down to the numbers. We have a very intelligent audience. So like, give us the science.
Yeah, our first satellites are going to be about as bright as a full moon. And they're about 160 square meters, and they're made of, you know, super thin plastic. It's about 90% reflective. There's a few wrinkles on it that reduce it by like about 20% or so when you pull it really tight. And you can actually do a calculation with an iridium flare. These are the brightest satellites you see in the night sky. They're basically these, you know, these old communications satellites with these huge antennas on them. And you can do the calc of those. They're like a -7 stellar magnitude, which is a bit brighter than Venus. And it's like a 1.6 square meter antenna. If you scale that up to 160 square meters, you end up with about a full moon of brightness. So that's how we sized our first satellites. We determined a full moon of brightness to be the minimum useful amount of light. Like, you can go hiking or surfing during a full moon, and emergency responders said it's like, yeah, it's the minimum useful amount of light. People can land planes in emergencies during a full moon. Mm-hmm. So we saw that as the easiest thing we could build that would actually be a useful product. Because if you go smaller than that, right, it's kind of just a bright star. You can't really do anything with that. It just looks cool. And if you go bigger than that, like, maybe you're wasting effort building a bigger thing than you need to. So that's how we sized the first satellites. And we're launching, you know, we've built two. Actually, as of yesterday at like midnight, we've now built two.
Wow.
The first one took 4 months. The second one took 2 months. So we're super proud of that. We built the whole satellite ourselves too, which is crazy. It's like 12,000 parts, 6,000 of which were built in-house. The mirror was this whole novel thing we had to figure out, which was super crazy. And it's really light. It's only 2 kilograms. This is like a small little piece behind me, but it's 28 times thinner than a human hair. And we can build one every 3.5 days. That's,
wow.
Actually, I'll just pull this up. We can build this, the entire floor gets covered with the reflector.
That's wild. We
do it in our other building, but it's just this huge thing. And that gets a full moon brightness to the ground. Now, if you want to get more brightness to the ground, what you do is you overlap multiple satellites together, like the Archimedes death ray. It is literally the same thing. Each satellite is a small flat mirror, and you just point a lot of them at the same spot. And it's cool. It's like approximating a parabola or like a condensed solar farm. When you use about 180 like Starlink V2 mini mass satellites with reflectors in them that deploy out to like 120 meters by 120 meters, which is about 14,000 square meters, that will get you about 50 watts per square meter to the ground, which is enough to turn on solar farms. And then you can continue scaling up if you want more brightness. But nominally, what you do is you put the satellites in rings like this. So you can have like one group of satellites and then another group that picks it up every 5 minutes or so. And they're always flying over new solar farms, and they're linked to a certain time of day. So that's how you get continuous service. You basically like build out these rings that provide constant coverage, and then you're getting the however much brightness you need for the customer, depending on how many satellites you have pointing at them at the same time. Or if you want to serve like, you know, 10 customers with, you know, it's one satellite per customer, or like, you know, 180 satellites per customer if you want that kind of super bright service.
Have you guys studied or asked about the implications for like night creatures and migrations and how it's going to affect kind of the flora and the fauna?
Yeah, absolutely. Every city that, you know, that's using street lights is affecting the animals in the area. Yep. There's like hundreds of species that have all different effects when you light up a certain area. The way I like to frame it is like nominally, if we're used for an emergency or something like that, it's kind of a different case. And that's really what we're going to start with. Then I'm very excited to start studying the effects of our light versus traditional street lights, where with a traditional street light, you basically have this uneven lighting over the whole area, where one spot will be at like 40 lux, but it'll be 3 lux in between the streetlights. And normally you're targeting about 3 lux, you know, minimum for a city. With us, we can just, you know, get the satellites to the right size where it's 3 lux everywhere over the whole area. Mm-hmm. And you're not over brightening certain spots. So for the same 3 lux, it's actually less photons. And you also don't have the glare from all the bulbs going in all different directions. It's light that's coming kind of straight down. And there's not a beam or anything like that. Mostly the light's just reflecting on the ground. Like if it's super cloudy, there'll be a little bit of a beam, but normally there's no beam or anything like that. We think for, you know, as long as the city is about the size of our spot, about 6,000 acres, it should be less light overall for the same walkability, the same feeling of safety. And if you right. already haven't built streetlights, that can be a really big deal. We're working with some folks who really want to bring this technology to developing nations that haven't installed streetlights yet. It's a huge deal for women's safety and things like that when you can actually like walk around at night and you can see, you know, people behind bushes. I remember I spent some time in Rwanda with zipline and they have no street lights and it's actually kind of scary to walk around. It's just like pitch black outside and you always feel like somebody's going to jump out of a bush. Even just like a tiny bit of light can make a really big difference. And all they have to do is hit a button and call our service down and we can be useful in those applications. And if we're less photons for the same feeling of safety, then it should have less of an effect on animals. So we're really excited to study that. That said, you want to make sure you do it very incrementally. That's why we're starting with one satellite. It's nominally off. It lights up a very small, very specific area. Like it's about the size of San Francisco Airport, which like you couldn't see on this map. It's like at the point of a pin. And we're only lighting up those areas on purpose. We only need to light up about 200 spots like that for our economics models to close. So it's very much it's not like we're lighting up the whole Earth or something like that. It's the very small, precise areas, very specific ways. And we'll study each of them.
You bring up a good point, though, about weather. Like, let's say San Francisco is like notoriously foggy. How does fog affect this technology? Is it going to be usable in those areas?
Yeah, we've looked into this with a bunch of PhD, you know, optical physicists. What happens is it's such a big spot that you basically light up all the clouds and a lot of the lights.
Oh, so it's like a diffusion. That's cool.
Yeah, but we don't really get diffused because it's such a big area. So like the middle of the spot will get diffused, but it'll just get diffused to like where some other light also got diffused backwards. So like if with a laser beam, that gets scattered to nothing. But our light's 6,000 acres. So a lot of it still gets through, basically the same amount as normal sunlight. So if the clouds are blocking half of the sun's power, it'll block half of our power. So a lot still gets through clouds. And then for like a solar farm or something like that, the average cloud blocking factor around the Earth is about 20%. So you can just include that in your economics. And actually for large solar farms, it's generally less because people tend to build solar farms in places that are especially arid and not cloudy. But yeah, like the cloudiest place on Earth is Shetland. That place is like always extremely cloudy. So it'd be pretty hard to serve there. Usually the clouds will block like 80% of the light or 90% of the light there. So like if we were trying to serve 10 lux, it'd usually be like 1 to 2 lux. But we'd still get that 1 to 2 lux through.
The applications for solar farms and for disaster areas are cool, but how are you going to control this for good instead of evil if somebody's just like, you know what? I want this construction site to work all night long. Like what is the vision for the future for this? Like, what are the economics for this? Can people afford it who are working with disaster zones versus like people who are just trying to use it to, I don't know, brighten up an area for longer work days? I'm trying to figure out how not to work longer work days.
Yeah, we have the ability to dim the light, so we can tune it to whatever we need. It's just a matter of how many satellites you have pointed at the same spot at one time. And normally, like the OSHA limit for brightness is like 50 lux or more for a construction site. And that's because it's lit up by these little tower lights that light up a small area. We've actually talked to some folks. We have like letters of intent with some folks who think that they could lower the limit because it's such a large area that's being lit up so evenly. So there might be cases where it's a little bit better to use our light than other light. Same thing. There's kind of the like, what do you use it for thing. We would definitely want to start with like emergency response. And like, actually there's this rule in the Middle East where you can't have people working between like 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. during the heat of the summer because it's just like so insanely hot. So with us, we could shift that so you can start working when it's nice and cool outside in the morning when it's dark out. So there's a lot of opportunities to use it for good in cases like that. And nominally, it would be a safety improvement thing. I think people had a lot of these kind of concerns. It's more of like a moral concern. Like the same thing happened when light bulbs came out. It's like, are light bulbs going to ruin us? Are they going to like ruin our circadian rhythms? Things like that. Like, is it going to be more like Norway in the summer? Like, are we just going to be like doing too many things? And I think that's more on the customers to choose than on us. I think we'll have some input, and obviously we're going to start with the best use cases first, and kind of explore from there. But I think it's way too early to start having discussions like that. We just want to focus on getting the technology working first.
Right.
Really controlled and like allow people to have that choice and really decide flexibly. And I think it'll be different depending on what country you're in. Like, you know, we talk to world leaders, we talk to people who are in charge of countries, and you know, each person has a different thing to decide, and we'll listen to them, and we'll do what they want nominally. I think if you start trying to like, you know, fight people politically, it never goes well. So we want to work with whatever people want already. There are a lot of cool benefits too. Like, if you look at the saturation or like the like melatonin suppression in mammals or like humans, after you get above about 3 lux, lights at night start suppressing melatonin. So if you can keep it below 3 lux, you're not going to suppress melatonin. So like we could do that everywhere. And as soon as you look at like a light bulb or like a car with a headlamp drives past you, like kind of blows it out. But with us, we could avoid doing that almost entirely. Like the light's so high up, you'll never really like be looking straight up at it. So there's a lot of potential benefits as well that we want to make sure, you know, they get a good shaking.
Now, when you're focusing all these, like, I mean, you're probably going to get to hundreds of thousands, if not millions of satellites, right? If you start focusing all those in one spot, how does that affect the temperature? Does it get hot? Is it like Archimedes' death ray?
So, yeah, we get this question a lot. We're limited by the laws of physics from building a death ray with a reasonable size constellation. Like, you basically need the entire energy of California's grid pointed at one spot at one time in order to like get any kind of heat, like any kind of like heat greater than the sun to the ground. It's an insane amount of power, like 60 gigawatts in an area, because it's a whole 6,000 acre spot. And it's because you're reflecting an image of the sun, and there's no way to make it smaller. Like, technically you can make it smaller, but you can't make it smaller and brighter. Like, the Archimedes death ray can't focus down to like 2 millimeters. It's reflecting an image of the sun from the distance, and it's like the similar triangle thing. So luckily, like, it's very safe. Like, I wish it wasn't that, like, honestly, I wish the laws of physics allowed us to shrink it down. It'd be a lot easier to do.
It'd be a lot cooler.
Yeah. but the laws of physics prevents that. So it's for like big areas only. So we can't do that. But theoretically, yeah, you can keep increasing the amount of light, and you do get some heating. So like, if there's a vineyard in Italy that's going to freeze and have frost, and all the crops are going to die, we could actually add a small amount of heat to that farm and keep it
from
freezing.
Cool.
In the future, it does take a lot of satellites, but you can do it when you have like, you know, 50,000 up or something like that.
Gotta save those grapes for the wine. Come on.
I know you're speaking our language now.
Do it for the Italians.
Well, they'll actually burn little like fires. They'll like light fires all in the fields now to keep it from burning. Then the question people always ask is like, does this negatively affect the climate? I'm sure that might be the next question. If you can do the calc, like this technology adding some sunlight to solar farms versus our current energy mix, which is you know, high fraction natural gas. If you do the calc out, we actually have a massive net cooling effect, because you're not releasing CO2 when you're burning those fuels. So if you're using us to replace a megawatt of any like the normal energy mix, it's a lot cleaner. We're about as clean as solar is just during the day, with no batteries.
With more and more satellites in low Earth orbit like that, and I know that, you know, sometimes the satellites die and they're just like up there as space trash. Like, how are you keeping those operational? I mean, I imagine you can't service them. How are you tracking everything?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, space sustainability is a really big deal. You want to make sure that your satellites deorbit at the end of their useful life. And for better or for worse, we have a giant reflector on our satellite, which, you know, when you're going like this through the atmosphere and you're kind of slicing through, it's very little drag. But as soon as you go like this, you get a ton of drag. Or if you're tumbling, you get a ton of drag. So at the end of our vehicle's life, they'll naturally deorbit very quickly because of that giant drag sail. And they'll fully demise in the atmosphere, which is really important. And we're operating out of low Earth orbit, like 600 kilometer orbits. Or even if we're doing the super late night service, we can do elliptical orbits that still pass through the atmosphere. So those also passively decay. And all of that keeps our satellites coming out of the sky after they're done serving their mission.
So you're burning your trash.
Yeah, we burn our trash. Yeah, and there's like a little bit of a question of the long-term sustainability of the aluminum, like the structure of the vehicles and like what that does to the upper atmosphere. Like it technically it blocks a little bit of sunlight, but it also has some hazardous effects on the ozone. So, you know, there's a lot of people looking into new materials that you can use that would be a little bit better for that. The other thing you can do if we really can't figure that out is you could just orbit, like deorbit on purpose and like land it in the middle of the ocean in a specific area without polluting the atmosphere with aluminum. So we're looking at all kinds of stuff like that. But you know, the reality is Starlink's already operating like well over 10,000 satellites. And
yeah,
they're doing their own thing. So we're kind of going to follow in their footsteps until, you know, maybe fingers crossed we surpass them. But we're definitely like, you know, with one satellite, that's a fairly standard mission. So yeah, we're not too concerned about that. It's a very small impact right now.
This is all so fascinating. Your journey from Ben N. Boy Genius on YouTube all the way to founder and entrepreneur is such an incredible story. I can't believe at such a young age you've accomplished so much.
Well, thanks so much. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't come across as a very bright person. Dude, it's like it blows my mind that at such a young age you're accomplishing so much. And just listening to you talk and you just understand this technology so well. It's very exciting, dude.
It's been a ton of fun. Yeah. I don't know. I always kind of just enjoyed making things with my hands and just kept going. I was like, oh, I want to make bigger and bigger things. Like, oh, I guess I'm going to have to make something useful so I can get enough money to actually do it. Like, oh, I guess I better like, you know, really get into starting companies. Yeah. And spent a lot of time on it too. I was like, you know, Olympians will spend like, you know, 14 hours a day training for the Olympics. Like, what would 14 hours a day of like engineering training look like? Like, how can I go and like figure out how to do that?
Oh my God, I had so many questions. Thank you. You've answered all of my questions because I had concerns, I had questions, and I'm so impressed. This is such a huge project and so ambitious. Like, yeah, what a crazy moonshot. I'm really, really excited to see where this goes.
Yeah, thank you.
Moro Casino. American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Wow, Ben isn't that bright. He's not a very smart individual. After this interview, I gathered he's not that smart. What do you think, Carrie?
These are my favorite kind of interviews. I love them so
much.
I had so many questions. I thought it was such a cool idea, but I did have some concerns, like what it actually meant. And it's actually so much cooler than I imagined. It's a really crazy ambitious project. Like that was so much fun.
Totally. I'm so blown away by that kid. Like, he was like, at 21, I quit my job to go start this startup. And I'm like, geez, what was I doing at 21? Not that.
I know. It was so awesome.
You know what, though, Carrie?
Yeah.
He's going to be blinding us with science.
Oh, my God. You know what's so funny? Yeah. Guess who I was hanging out with last night?
Who?
Thomas Dolby.
Oh, you just dropped a name. Let me take that out for you.
No, well, last night I got a last minute email. I was like on the airplane on the way home and he's just—
Wait, where'd you see him?
Well, he was performing at the Castro Theater and I'm just like—
Oh, that's fun.
I'm like, I don't know if my plane's going to make it in time. I went home, like dropped my stuff, jumped in an Uber, went straight over there to just like give drive-by hug kind of thing. And it was like Flock of Seagulls and Tommy Two-Tone and all this like random 80s nights kind of thing
awesome.
Happening at the theater. So I just, you know, after the show was over, I went and hung out for a little bit. He says hello, by the way.
That's awesome.
Maybe I should tell him that there's somebody who's actually blinding us with science.
Yeah. I mean, that kid's too smart, man. It was like some of the things he was saying, I was like trying to keep up. I'm like, what is— I was like, wow, that's impressive.
He sent me a little sort of like, here's the science behind what I'm doing that was actually very technical with a lot of numbers. And I watched the entire video. And my brain hurt afterwards. I'm like, it's so much that I just want him to explain it to us on the podcast. I'm not going to even try. not going to even try.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, most, I don't know, when you get an engineer who is that smart, they aren't really good at communicating. His communication skills are incredible. So I could see how this thing is going to work.
Yeah, I mean, he had everything that I'm always trying to tell the STEM festival kids about. It's like, yeah, you can have a great idea, but you need to be able to communicate it. Storytelling is a huge engineering skill for you. Networking is incredible if you want to be an entrepreneur. Like, these are all really, really valuable skills for us to teach our kids. Like, when you're going out into the world of business, like, it's not just about learning the facts. You're not going to college so that you can just ingest books and have facts in your head. Part of, like, going to college is about the networks that you're going to build. I mean, Steve Jobs may have dropped out of college, which I hear a lot of kids tell me, but I'm like, yeah, but the network he got from all the people that he met is how he built Apple in the first place with Steve Wozniak. So, like, don't take college for granted. I know that a lot of people don't want to go at this point, but if you're not going to go, you still have to build those networks. I just think that that's such an important takeaway from him. And there is my TED Talk on what you should tell your
kids. Wow, that was inspiring, Carrie. I'm going to go out and network.
Is it time for an audience question?
I'm going to go network. Oh, my God. What was that?
Sorry, I was just came from like a...
You just got off your... All right, well, I think it's time. Well, Carrie, thank you for those words of wisdom. So it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Clearly.
It's time for our fan question. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready. What we got? What we got?
All right. This question comes from Jill P. in Los Angeles. Are there any inventions in the past 5 years that you wish you were still on Mythbusters now to try and test?
God, so many weird inventions.
Yeah. Drones weren't really a thing while we were doing Mythbusters, but it would have been so much fun. I mean, we kind of touched on it. You touched on it. On White Rabbit Project, on how to take down drones or, you know, have some kind of drone defense. But I think that would have been such a fun experiment, like you, Grant, and myself, each coming up with different techniques to try to take down or defend against drones. That would have been fun.
Yeah, my net that I created for White Rabbit Project was basically just like an air launcher that launched a giant net around them. It wasn't great. It wasn't great. I saw Jamie at one point came up with an awesome drone catcher that he was developing that had all these tiny little bolos that mm-hmm. just shot out almost like a machine gun that just went and sprayed the drones with little bolos that would like take them out. I thought that was really, really creative. I mean, I would love to test some of the kind of goofy inventions that we've seen, like fighting robots. If a human versus robot, could you just take them out because they're not that great at being bipedal? Like, and can you just like sweep the legs? Like, mostly just so I could see you fight a robot.
That'd be an expensive episode. I would have given that one to Grant. Grant would have been the robot fighter.
You would have let him fight the robots?
Yeah. But you know what? I saw this video. I don't know if it's AI or not, but it's from China and they have this microwave emitting this huge pulse of microwave and it knocks out like a sky full of drones.
Really?
I mean, if it's real, it'd be pretty rad.
High-power pulse microwaves are transmitted to 5 drone circuit boards. GPS and flight control chip with an effective range.
That looks like AI.
I don't know. I want to do some more research. But, I mean, it makes sense, right? That pulse will disrupt the electronics on the drones. It's pretty fascinating. If it is real, if it's a working weapon.
Well, that would change everything. Some insane drone defense, for real.
Woohoo! That was fun, Carrie. Thank you for finding Ben Nowak. Very, very brilliant young man.
Yeah, Ben was awesome. He's the kind of guest that I'm so interested in. Mythfits, if you guys have come across interesting inventions or just wild ideas or people that you think that we should talk to, we love the suggestions because it's really fun to talk to people doing wild and crazy things like this.
Well, thank you guys again for joining us on Mythfits. Please remember to subscribe, like, Share, that really helps us on the algorithm. We need all the help we can get.
Yeah, and as part of the community, please help us figure out like who you want to talk to, what you want to talk about. We love being part of this MythFit community, and we'll see you guys next time. Stay weird, MythFits.
Stay weird, like Carrie, not me. I'm normal.
Yeah, weird.
Pioneer.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.